Welcome to Email After Hours by Senderscore, powered by Validity.
We're your hosts. My name is Guy Hansen.
And I'm Danielle Gallant, and this is Email After Hours. Today, we're journeying through the maze of personalization in the digital era. It's kind of like walking on a tightrope, right? On the one side, you've got brands using data to curate memorable moments for their customers. And on the other, it can feel like a creepy stalker vibe sometimes. And it's more than just understanding buying habits. It's about predicting moods, needs, and even future desires. So hold on to your headphones. We're about to dissect what it means to say, "Show me that you know me," in a world drowning in data.
That's right. Today's guest is a real dynamo when it comes to data-driven marketing. We're speaking with Rena Sarin-Ratten, who's been pioneering some truly revolutionary customer engagement tactics in her role as senior CRM and customer marketing leader. Most recently at The Body Shop, she's a specialist when it comes to crafting personal stories in a digital world. Rena, welcome. We're so excited to have you with us today. And thank you so much for joining myself and Danielle.
Thank you for having me, guys.
We've started kicking off with a bit of an icebreaker that I live in fear that I'm going to be asked one day because I just don't know what my answer would be. But Rena, if you had to choose one famous song to describe your day as a senior CRM and customer marketing leader, what would it be?
Well, this is an icebreaker question, isn't it? Because I have to really scratch my head. Do you know what? The one that really springs to mind, don't judge me on this, guys, is Katy Perry's Raw. And reason being, let me just add context to my answer. Reason being is because in a world of how many emails coming through your inbox, you need your email to roar and cut through. So I think that for me is probably the one.
It's a good one. And also there's like a little note that was made, I don't know by whom, but in our notes it says, Spotify shows at least four songs called Subject Line. Sure, what? Yeah.
That was me.
What are the?
You'd probably think I don't have anything better to do with my time. I actually listened to all of them. A couple are really, really good.
Love that.
Danielle, I know you and I keep getting threatened with this question. I've been listening to a lot of old talking heads recently. And when it comes to email marketing, wild, wild life sounds about right.
There you go. Katy Perry's Raw is relevant, isn't it, guy?
Spot on. Okay, let's talk about great personalization.
Let's do it.
We sometimes talk about the evolution of message personalization and the importance of using it to try and create something authentic and meaningful. How well do you feel the ongoing march of digital marketing technology has served this requirement?
I think this is something that's still ongoing. So I think there's a lot of technology out there that is really nailing personalization. You know, it starts with subject lines and then what time something should be sent and what content should be surfaced to each customer. But I think with the changing consumer behaviors and, you know, external factors, it's an ongoing thing. So I'm really excited about this space right now. I think there's a lot of cool technologies out there that are, you know, making their mark and really hitting the nail on the head. And some brands are really embracing that. And I think it'll be interesting, I think, over the next 6 to 12 months, just to see how that space really sort of materializes.
Recently, you've been really well positioned to see this firsthand as a judge in the best use of email category at this year's DMA Awards. That's a subject really close to my heart. Rena, I know you're under obligation, and that means that you can't talk about any of the specific entries.
Correct.
But did any personalization trends stand out to you while you were reviewing the entries?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the things that really stood out to me is the use of dynamic content within emails and really sort of trying to challenge, you know, the current stat. I think it's where customers read an email between 7 to 11 seconds at their attention span. So I think what really stood out to me is where brands are really trying to push that time span a little bit more. So showing a bit more interactivity within emails, dynamic content, something that you click on and then it shows you something else depending on what you clicked on. Some really cool stuff. So I think that really stood out to me. And again, I think it was a really good opportunity to see how brands are using technology within emails to really sort of hit personalization and cut through and, yeah, really sort of, I guess, push those email stats.
And you're an advocate for the whole show me that you know me mantra, which is a phrase that Guy and I love, and we're sure you love too. Has there ever been a moment when a brand hit your inbox with a message that was so spot on that you thought, like, these guys have a crystal ball or something? Like, give us the scoop on that personalization wizardry that really genuinely made you feel like you weren't just another email address in their campaign.
For me, I'm the one brand that really stands out to me, and I think they're really smart with their data capture, is Moonpig. Mm. So, you know, they use zero-party data and they say, you know, what, tell me a date that you want to be reminded of, which I think is brilliant because you can see, like, you can see the value of providing that data to them. But then if you don't do that, so I recently had an email from them saying, this time last year, you bought this card. Do you need it again? And all of a sudden, I had a bit of a panic moment. I thought, oh my gosh, have I forgotten someone's birthday? And then I actually opened it. I clicked through and I thought, well, that's a really neat way for me as a customer to kind of go, actually, do I need that? No, I've got that covered. Or, you know, as a bit of a reminder. So I think that's a really cool technique. And I thought that's really smart.
We like Moonpig. Earlier this year, when Valentine's Day came around, they were in the press as a ChatGPT innovator. What they did was they integrated it into their Valentine's offers. Mm. So something like, we know you're a bit rubbish at writing really great Valentine's messages to your significant other. So here's some cool AI to help you do it better.
Love that.
They got some great press from that. Speaking of doing a great job, Rina, what about the perennial question? Is there a risk of marketing that becomes too personalized? I mean, we've just been through Halloween. So where does the line get drawn between clever and creepy?
Yeah, no, really great question, Guy. I think for me, personalization is about using that data smart and using that insight really well to put those strategies in place. And I think the creepy side is where brands go on assumptions. If you buy something, so let's just say you're buying something as a wedding shower or something like that, brands assume you're getting married. So I think something like that is a bit of a no-no, you know? And I think just being really smart with that data, having that confidence and giving that confidence to the customer as well. I think that's a big thing. That's a big topic right now, is about the trust for customers to have with brands. So I think that for me is probably really key.
In October, Validity had one of our Inbox Insider webinars where we were talking about like spooky email stories. And that's exactly what we were talking about, Rina, where it's like we're making assumptions and sending these emails that are an attempt to personalize, but really miss the mark. And I think it's fair to say that within the best programs, there's a value exchange that really helps build the relationship. So what are your thoughts on the use of customer data for marketing where it can both benefit the company and the customer, or can it do that?
I think it does because, I mean, the example I've just given with Moonpig is I'm voluntarily telling you this information so you can remind me, right? There's the value there. But I think ultimately, for me, this ladders up to customer retention and loyalty. It's the best use of marketing data. And I'm a massive advocate of customer retention. So I feel very strongly about it. But I 100% believe if you use customer data the right way to create personalization, and for me, this is my mantra whenever I'm at work, is hit the right customer at the right time with the right message using the right channel. So I think for me, that automatically just leads to customer retention, customer satisfaction, front of mind in terms of brand intent, purchases, repurchases. You're hitting the nail across all of those points.
You know, that mantra has been used in marketing for a long time. But I think it's evolved because you need to find your customer in the right moment as well.
Yeah.
That's not always so easy to achieve because personalization is often quite narrowly focused on aspects like demographics or purchase history. Yeah. Mm. Do you have a really good example of a sender using purchase history specifically to enhance the personalization experience?
Yeah, I think supermarkets are really good at that, you know, especially with the frequency of shop. So it makes sense to almost say, you know, you bought this yogurt, do you want it again? And if there's a loyalty scheme involved, you know, buy it and you get 25 extra points or something like that. So I think supermarkets are really nailing purchase history and sending those relevant marketing messages.
That's absolutely right. We've talked previously about the really great example of this that you developed at the Body Shop, where previous purchase history was used to inform your win-back program by identifying when you thought the next purchase should be and messaging those customers if they failed to transact. Want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so I think what it comes down to is literally what I've just said is, I think it's getting the right customer at the right time. And that's exactly what it was. It was reviewing the strategy and optimizing that win-back campaign. And as you say, it did great.
When it comes to this whole idea of show me that you know me, great personalization shouldn't just be a once-off event. It's something you've got to practice throughout the customer journey. And I guess we could spend half a day talking about this, starting with the data collection right at the beginning. So how do you ensure great personalization becomes embedded as part of the ongoing customer lifecycle?
Really good question, Guy. I think for me, when I sort of look at this, firstly, I want to understand what's my objective for the customers I'm sort of looking at. So firstly, I'd say you've got prospects, you've got new customers, you've got existing, you've got lapsed. So all of those have got different objective prospects. You want to convert them and get them to shop. New customers, is it about nurturing them? Is it about pushing them for a second purchase and understanding those customer journeys? So I think that for me is the main starting point. And then layering on, what data and insight do I know about those customers, right? And sort of weaving those into that segmentation, creating those personalized journeys, essentially as well, getting that holistic view of that customer journey. What's the different touch points? Is it email? Is it SMS? Is it in store? Is it on social? And ensuring whatever touch point that customer has, you've got that consistent message. So I think it's having that seamless customer journey across the different touch points. That would be the main summary for me.
And often when we talk about creating that one-to-one email, where it's like, you know, this is a highly personalized, hyper-personalized message for an individual subscriber, we have to talk about automated marketing journeys, right? And it's kind of, there's this weird dichotomy there because it's like, yes, we want to create very highly personalized messages, but these are automated. We know they're being triggered. Can automated marketing journeys really feel personal?
I might be biased on this, but I'm going to say yes. and let me add a bit of like context to that. I think yes, messages can be automated, but it's about creating that dialogue with the customer, right? And it goes back to what I've just said, you know, sending the right message to the right customer at the right time. You can automate when something goes to a customer. We'll look at us three. Guy shops twice a year. Daniel shops four times a year. I shop every month, right? So again, our frequency will be different and you can automate that. Rather than somebody sending them go blast to Guy, blast to Danielle and a blast to Rena. So I think in that sense, I think it's just being really effective with what you're sending when.
Speaking of blasts, here we are at the beginning of November as we record this episode. And probably the biggest event on almost every email marketer's calendar is rapidly approaching. The Black Friday, Cyber Monday long weekend, and then into the holiday season and the Christmas season. So my question is, you know, during a really high volume period like this, is personalization still as effective or is it even more effective because it's such a busy time?
I think this trickles down to your customer segmentation. But for me personally, I think this is a moment to acknowledge and reward your loyal customers and go with that angle in terms of personalization. So, I mean, I know a lot of brands that have gone early for Black Friday. They're already talking about it. But is it about being a bit clever and saying, well, actually, as our most valued customer, you can go early, or here's an exclusive preview as to what's coming up. And we know that Black Friday is all about discount. It's all about price. So there's no point even talking about anything outside of that, right? So I think in that sense, in terms of segmentation and the value of customers, that's where brands can really be personalized.
This is one of the questions that I get too from clients on a regular basis. And it sounds like a basic question, and I'm sure it varies. But how do companies measure the real impact of personalization on customer engagement and loyalty?
No, I think that's a really valid question. And for me, it's about having tests in place and setting up like an A-B test. I'm a massive advocate of that, to kind of say, here's a personalization test and here's a non-personalization test. Run them together at the same time and you can measure the uplift between the two. Key metrics to look at: email engagement, what percentage are opening your emails, clicking through, conversion, and essentially ROI. How do those metrics compare between the two? Guaranteed your personalization version is gonna nail it.
Yeah, we're huge fans of test and learn too, and we do a lot of it with our own email program. Now, when it comes to great personalization, it's not only about knowing which product your customers like the most or when they want to shop. It's also about knowing their values, isn't it? Is there an overlap, do you think, between a brand's social commitments and how they resonate with their customers' own ethical positioning when it comes to personalization?
Okay, so I think in terms of personalization, I think I've seen a lot of brands where they personalize emails and say, your contribution or your purchases with us has contributed X amount towards this ethical factor or sustainability element that the brand is really passionate about. And it's potentially one of the reasons why the customer is shopping with that brand as well. So I think putting that at the forefront to say, because of you, we're able to do this. And I think that's a really smart way of personalizing in that ethical arena.
So important for it to be seen that it's for real, not just virtue signaling.
This is it. And I think sustainability and like the ethical stance of brands, that's becoming much more of a hot topic. So I think being proactive and sort of talking to customers with that personalized lens on is really key. And you'll receive a lot of emails where these kind of stats, sometimes at the bottom of an email, and rather than maybe this should be a header and to say, this is what the brand represents, this is what we're doing for the planet. And, you know, these types of things, which for customers who that's really important to, they'll love that. That's like one of the first things they'll see when they open an email.
Shout out to the travel company Intrepid on this one. I've done a couple of tours with them and they are so good about A, being consistent. So they're not just sending one of those emails right before they like do a big promotion to you. It's integrated into their marketing or their entire program, but they do a really good job of highlighting how they practice sustainable travel, and just love them. So brand shout out there. But in your experience, what are some common pitfalls or maybe misconceptions that marketers can fall into when it comes to personalization?
I think when you sort of mentioned it, Danielle, at the beginning, it's just going into using demographics and purchase history, and that's it. And then it's like, yep, I've done my job. I've personalized an email. I think that probably is one of the biggest misconceptions. And there's so much more than that. You know, we've got so much data that you can utilize to really enhance personalization within not just emails, but all marketing comms. So I think for me, that's probably what the biggest ones are.
That's exactly right. Now, we opened today's conversation talking about how personalization technologies developed over the years. Looking forward, getting out your crystal ball again, how do you think personalization technology will continue to evolve?
From what I've seen, I think using more AI and predictive modeling, I see that sort of coming into this landscape now. So it's not just, yeah, what have you done? It's more about what do we predict you to do, but that extra layer as well in terms of, is price a factor for your purchase? Are you a brand loyal customer? What's the value that you bring? And sort of, I guess, creating that understanding of the different segments. I see it going that way, but you never know. You never know what's coming.
Seems like we're back to our Moonpig example. Roses are red, violets are blue. I use ChatGPT for this love letter to you.
I think to your point, Rita, if we're talking about like AI or predictive modeling, it's almost more subtle in terms of personalization, right? It's not like, hey, first name, you've been a customer for this many years, and it's much more subtle.
It's much more than that. I think, you know, I was thinking about it, and the analogy for me is you go and get your regular coffee from Starbucks or whatever it is, and the more you go, the more they know what your order is going to be, right? So one day you walk, and you know, they'll say, "What's your name?" And then they'll get your coffee or whatever ready. So it's about that, but it's creating that in the digital space. So it's like walking in and almost saying, "Oh, hi, Rena. So extra large latte for you. Yep, coming right up," without you even having to say anything, because they know that. And it's building that knowledge and understanding about the customer and their needs, their frequency of visit, their spend. Do you want a muffin to go with that? Yep. Okay, it's Friday. I know that you're going to treat yourself. That type of thing. And creating that view in the digital arena. And I think that's really exciting. And I'm really excited about what that looks like.
Me too. I mean, this has been such an awesome conversation, Rena. We could go on. I don't know how many times we said the word personalization in this recording, but I feel like somebody should count it. Put that in.
Well, Guy said we could talk about it for half a day, so I might hold you to that, Guy.
And before we wrap up here, of course, Guy and I have a couple of quick-fire questions that we like to throw out, kind of hot takes at the end of each episode, and I'm going to kick us off with one today, and it's really about hot goss and dishing the dirt. So you don't have to name names here, of course, but what's the most, like, facepalm personalization fail that either you've witnessed or you've had land in your mailbox?
There's been a recent one where I literally just went
up. That was an actual facepalm, guys.
It was an actual facepalm, and I just thought, now there's two views to this. So let me set the scene. My daughter's birthday coming up. I was looking for a desk and a chair for her room. And so this particular brand has captured, this is what I'm typing in the search bar on their website. And they then sent me emails to say, you know, hey, here's some desks and chairs that you might like based on what you've been browsing. I've then had a great customer experience. I purchased a desk, I purchased a chair, and then had my delivery, built the desk, built the chair, everything's done. And then four to 5 weeks after, I still continued to get emails to say, buy a desk, buy a chair. So exactly. So from a customer point of view, I thought, I kind of lost a bit of trust, because I thought, how do you not know that I've purchased from you?
Perhaps they're expecting your first one to fall apart.
So no, I mean, you're being a bit kind, Guy.
You're opening your own office space right now.
I was like, let me have my facepalm moment, Guy. And then, yeah, but then as a marketer, and I thought, you have not linked my browsing data with my purchase data, and this is first party data. How have you not made that link? You know, and it was really frustrating. I thought from a really great customer experience, that really let me down. So that would be my answer to that question.
That's a great answer. Slightly more serious question: if you're speaking to a marketing newbie, someone who's getting to grips with the challenges of marketing personalization for the first time, and they want to shake things up a little bit, any advice you'd give them? Any great tips or tactics?
I hope this doesn't give anybody facepalm moments, but for me, I would say quality over quantity.
Totally.
I think as marketers, we almost say, right, I need to send an email to my full 500K base or something, but actually, is it relevant for 500K? All of those 500K customers in your base? Is it about, actually, I'm going to get the same ROI if I just talk to 350K? So I'd say quality over quantity.
Totally agree. And before we wrap up, of course, we want to give you guys a little bit of a preview. I don't know, though. Guy, what are we up to for our next episode?
I have a surprise for you, Danielle.
Oh, no.
In 2 weeks' time, it's going to be you and me.
You're stuck with me.
We're going to be doing a retrospective of this year and some of the coolest talking points we've covered in the last 20 episodes of Email After Hours, including this fabulous one. Join us again in a fortnight's time. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, that's very exciting, guys. I'll definitely be tuning in for that.
Thank you so much, everybody, and we will talk to you next time.
Be sure to tune in next time and hit subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. And don't forget to visit senderscore.com for loads more great resources to help you become a stronger sender.
To all you sleepless senders out there, thank you for joining us after hours, and see you next time.